pretty much sums it up. Might as well just cut to it every Tuesday and play that track. Down Under, Men at Work, 1983. Maurice Misolowski, how are you today?
I am very, very good, very hot. Happy Tuesday, everyone.
Happy Tuesday to you. It's not bad here either. Maurice, big Spider-Man fan, with great power comes great responsibility, said Uncle Ben, not knowing that that would become an incredibly famous saying. But that sort of takes us where we're going today, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I thought today we might have a look at unintended consequences following on from last week's stuff that we thought, you know, that was invented and took on a life of its own, did stuff that we didn't necessarily think about when it first came around.
Isn't that human ingenuity, or what you like to call sometimes horrible humans, that if it's doable, we will do it?
Yeah, for better or for worse. Some people will go down the better road, some people will go down the worse road.
Yeah.
And it was brought about by something you'd found. It was the 100th anniversary of...
the first TV broadcast yesterday.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking five pixels or something crazy like that.
We're not even, and we're not talking broadcasting as we know in people's homes. We're really talking about, if anybody remembers, I love Willy Wonka.
Yeah.
You remember the film where Willy Wonka, and was it Violet that got shown? You know, they took a picture of her and they sent her down the television screen.
That
type of thing. Yeah, whatever it was. I don't even know if it was Violet, I think. Anyway, one of the characters, anyway, got shot down. In other words, it was really embryonic, really funny, and why would we? You know, what I love about this, it was 1926. 1926 means a lot, strangely enough. I wasn't around yet, although many people think I was. But 1926 was the year that Queen Elizabeth was born. She's no longer with us. 1926 was the year my mother and my mother-in-law were born, too. Neither of them are with us either. So a lot happened in 1926 for us in many ways, but what happened for our gentleman that invented this, John Logie Baird, he invented what we now call television.
And it was first demoed in grimy London, in Soho, wasn't it?
At the West End.
At
the West End.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Yeah. At the same time, I mean, again, I wasn't there. I couldn't get tickets. Apparently Fred Astaire and his sister Adele were dancing on the old Empire Theatre long before he became a movie star. And they were showing silent movies at the TIV.
The TIV.
I love that. I have no idea about the TIV, but everyone talks about it at the TIV, which was Tivoli on the Strand in good old London in West End.
Yeah. Well, this is very interesting because even today, if you're not a scientist and you think through how television worked, it's still a lot to take in, actually.
Quite
interesting. Logie Baird, he thought of it as... what was it? Radio with pictures. Obviously the notion of television just wasn't there.
No, absolutely not. I mean, we take it so for granted. That's why it's difficult having this conversation, because we've had 100 years of moving pictures. But before this, there wasn't. We were talking silent movies if you went to the cinema, which was not something everybody could do. It was still relatively expensive in those days. It wasn't an everybody, everyday, everything activity. And that was about the most you got. And we were talking about the times when there were cameras around, of course, but it was expensive to take the family portrait. Most people have that sepia, you know, not quite black and white picture, that brownie one of Rellos who are 100 years old who are sitting there with very dour looks on their face. And that's because it costs so much to take the picture that you wouldn't dare smile and you didn't anyway. But that's the era we're talking about. The advent of the moving car was just coming about. All those things were relatively new. And in the description I found for this first attempt at television, and you're right, he called it televisor.
Oh, yeah.
I love this because it talks about the period so well. There were around 40 members of the Royal Institution that came to see this 100 years ago. They were the most influential in the UK, science, research, education charities.
Yep.
And it was on the 22nd floor. But what I love about this is that they described that they were in formal morning suits. Everybody was wearing the top hat and that complete outfit, because this was such a big event. Even though it was small, unknown, these were scientists. That's the way they dressed. It was so unusual then that they were going out for a night of something no one had ever seen before, that they were dressed to the nines in evening dresses.
You know what, even...
Of course not.
Go on.
No, I was going to say, of course, no females. I mean, let's just be totally frank. No females. It was totally male audience, which says a lot about the time too. Not a good thing about the time, but it talks about the time as well.
It does. It really takes you back there. It's like those old, you know, see the Elephant Man and all these stuffy doctors in their posh suits and in the lecture hall. But the thing that really blows me away about television was not too dissimilar to movie film. It was mechanical. It wasn't electronic.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. It was not only mechanical, but it was hand. I mean, it was really hand-cranked in the very, very early days. It was hand-cranked. Its predecessor was, of course, the pictures that we took. But at carnivals, you would put, you put a dime in or whatever the appropriate currency was, wherever you were. And again, many have seen this on films or in other places. But there was that thing where they had a number of cards in it, and the cards... picture cards, and the card was somebody on a bicycle, for instance.
Yeah.
And as you spun it at the right, at the right speed, the bike would seem to be moving. The person would seem to be riding down the road.
Exactly.
And of course, if you cranked too fast or too slow, it just didn't work properly. You had to have the right number of frames per minute. And that's really what this came down to. It came down to the ingenuity of figuring out how many frames per second the item had to move in order for it to look like it was moving. Mm. And then how do we get it to crank that fast? And originally it was done by hand at exactly that movement.
It's crazy, isn't it? Just to put another thing in perspective, we were talking about crummy picture. I mean, hello. But these days, I mean, your basic av on your phone might be 1080. Then we'll have, 2,000, 3,000, up to 8,000, and who knows, even more lines on the TV screen. Mm-hmm. Well, they had 30.
Yeah.
That's really nuts, isn't it?
And we're talking about it, I mean, compared to today, of course, a very, very bad black and white image of it. But can you imagine how extraordinary this thing was?
Yeah.
I mean, just phenomenal that for the first time ever, we had created an image and were able to put it on a screen remotely. In other words, somewhere away from where it had been created, store it, put it on remotely, and then watch it again and again. Quite extraordinary.
Well, unintended consequences. Now, I think we've already talked about that because John Logie Baird didn't even think of anything other than it's a radio with a few pictures. So,
yeah.
But Morris's note to me this morning said, no one watching thought that it will reshape politics, parenting, war, advertising, loneliness, blah, 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 blah. The list goes on. So unintended consequences. This is a brilliant example of it, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And what happens is, of course, as it became more and more popular, of course, it took literally about 50 years, no exaggeration, about 50 years for it to become almost an everyday item.
Yeah,
That's a long, long time. And we're talking about not yet colour TV in most places. We're still talking about black and white, the small screen. Most people had the big box around it. I know that we had the gramophone above it, the record player, and the big dial radio next to it. It was all part of a suite that was built in together. Mm. But it took 50 years for it to become something that most families thought that they should own at least one of.
It's interesting, actually, that some of these great inventors, we love talking about people. Tesla might be different to the guys I'm going to mention now. So here we have John Logie Baird. He's an engineer. He wants to create this gadget, but he's not a futurist, mm-hmm. right?
No. No, and was just doing it because he could. I mean, he saw that these still images could really have some movement. Again, there was already some movement on screen, but it wasn't to the point where perhaps you could televise this into a home. I mean, could you imagine in 26 talking about a home? Remember, electricity only came about 15 years or so ago. Most homes in London would not have had electricity in them yet. That's how far in advance this thing is. So just the notion of plugging it in to make it work wasn't even something most people could think they could do.
Just a sidebar here. I mean, Nikola Tesla was a futurist, and that's kind of why he was cancelled, and the guys at the time were obviously so jealous of him, and yet he was a genius.
Yeah, yeah, he was. And I mean, he absolutely was. And we've talked about him often over the years
of how
inventive he was, how extraordinary he was, and how gazumped he was,
meaning that
The poor dude just got walked over nearly with every invention. Somebody else either came and stole it from him, took him from it, paid him out for peanuts on it, or just didn't listen to him until many years later.
Apparently Edison would send boys round if he didn't like something that somebody was doing, movie of films and stuff.
Yeah,
he said
the story goes.
He'd send the heavies round. Crazy.
Yeah, so the story. Or he'd buy them out for a pittance on the dollar or do something where we're told he was quite ingenious at getting things to be owned by him.
Yeah, no kidding.
Is what the story's known again.
No kidding. Well, let's talk a bit more of the unintended consequences things.
Yeah.
I mean,
so there,
go on.
So there's the splitting the atom. We've talked about that a lot. The atom was split because we wanted to understand matter. We wanted to understand energy. And, of course, that became nuclear weapons.
Do you think, more a cynical head on, do you really think that that was the I mean, it probably was with a lab full of scientists, but it doesn't take long to realise that you could do a lot of damage with this thing.
Yeah, I actually think that their intent was pure. I'm talking about the one or two people that came up with it originally, because I've worked with these scientists before, not splitting the atom scientists, but researchers. They are just so single fixated on something. Yeah. It's literally like, only number one exists, if that makes sense. There's no other number in the world. Everybody else can see a complete, you know, infinity numbers. They just see one thing in front of them. Yeah. So many of these people are very much fixated like that, and they don't really think about the broader consequences. But there are some interesting ones. Not that they're not, but something like plastic. You know, plastic was invented for the pure reason that people wanted to do away with ivory, because ivory, of course, came from the tusks of animals, and that was difficult. Firstly, some people were concerned because that meant killing
not so
of animals.
Many, but unfortunately, probably.
But unfortunately, that wasn't the reason. The reason was that there were many, many people that became very rich, and it was becoming more and more difficult to find ivory and to bring it back to the motherland, being England or somewhere else. So they invented plastic for ivory. And, of course, today, plastic's used in nearly everything, and we're trying to get plastics out of it.
Yeah.
It's also the cause of mass pollution, microplastics in food and humans.
But without
it. Without it, where would we have been? Nylon was the same. Nylon is a man-made invention that was meant to overcome the scarcity of cotton, which was, of course, used as cotton, silks, all those pure materials, but difficult to find, difficult to farm, expensive. So they were looking for something that was mass-produced, and nylon became it. In its day, for the first 10, 20 years, it was wild, and it was wildly accepted and used for all kinds of things. And today still is, but not as much, again, because of its ramifications.
So there's going to be another graph here somewhere, isn't there? The sort of notion of environmental protection versus progress. Obviously, back in the 20s, you know, they were still taking morphine for a cough, I suppose. But
Well, they were. And on that also, antibiotics. You know, antibiotics are about 100, 120 years old, something that we take, a doctor might give us because we have a cold or we have a flu or something. We know they work really, really well, or have historically. And many people died. I mean, many millions of people died for centuries and centuries before they were invented. But we have become, over the years, humans have become less and less, also so I should say more and more, resistant to antibiotics, to now where it's not unusual to find people who it doesn't work on at all, because genetically our bodies have just begun to understand these things come into our body over parents, grandparents, great-great-grandparents, and the body said, look, they're not meant to be here, so we're going to figure out a way around it. So our bodies naturally kind of become resistant to antibiotics. That's really interesting as well, not just mechanical or man-made, but human physiology is fighting against some of this stuff.
You know, this isn't intentional, but this is a great segue from a couple of things we've talked about before. I'm thinking, well, unintended consequences, TV has done a lot of harm. It's also done a lot of good. Do we have any now? Well, you know what the obvious one now is, because last week we talked about AI slop, didn't we?
Well, we did, and we would have to talk about, of course, social media, Facebook and those. When it first started, there were many doomsayers, as they rightly were, but many people accepted them. We know that by that wonderful thing we talked about last week, the hype cycle, curve, which tells us how quickly something's accepted by people. And we said television was about 50 years. Facebook was about 18 months. Still a long time compared to what we saw with our ChatGPTs and other things, but 18 months was extraordinary, going back 20 years or so, for technology to be used so quickly. The PC took about 10 years. All those things took much longer. But we talked today about the downside of social media, to the point where our government, the Australian government, and now other governments around the world have begun to ban social media for people under 16.
How's it going?
That's how far we've come in 2020. What do we know about?
No, I said, how's it going? I mean, what's the goss?
Honestly... if you ask the government, they've done the best thing since sliced bread. I love that expression. They've done wonderful things, and they've changed the world. And all of a sudden now, our youth have forever gone back to some halcyon. You can tell how sarcastic I am by this. Every single person I talk to that's under 16, for the right reason, just laughs and doesn't even know it's on. I mean, it's just a nonsense. I have not seen anybody, and this is what they were claiming beforehand, that they were saying under 16s, you know, would take terrible lengths and it would cause harm in their lives if it wasn't there. And everybody under 16 was laughing and saying, you know, you old folks think that way. We're just going to use a VPN or some other way to get around it. And kids primarily have. I think it's still something that we should have done. I just don't like this blanket approach. We spoke about that before.
Yeah.
If you tell somebody something is wrong or something's bad for you, me especially, I'm going to want it.
It's really funny, Maurice.
And that's what's happened here.
Yeah. It's really funny. You just talk about the best things since sliced bread. I mean, of all the things you've just been talking about in the last 10 minutes, we still have to say sliced bread.
And do you know why that is? That was really because sliced bread was actually an advertising slogan that came about in the 1930s. Oh. And that's exactly where it came from, because until then, bread was something primarily made at home. Yeah. So there were some people that were buying it out. And if you bought it out, it was a whole loaf. I know this sounds mundane. And the people that sold the whole loaves into milk bars and those sorts of places was looking for a way to make it marketing sexy. Somebody came up with the idea of if you slice it, it becomes more convenient. Because, of course, when you make a bread, you have to slice it. And the advertising slogan that went with that was exactly that. And that's where that came about and became an everyday occurrence.
That's got to be one of the best. I mean, if it's legit, it's got to be one of the best slogans ever. Because that was 100 years ago, nearly.
Well, nearly. Yeah. And we see lots of those. One in Australia that works really well is aeroplane jelly. And that much probably doesn't translate over very well. But we have this slogan about aeroplane jelly, which, again, is 100 years old in Australia. And I'm sure most countries have the same sorts of slogan. But that one seems to be a bit more universal.
If I could take AI out of the conversation right now, just for a few seconds, is there anything else that you think would be such a paradigm, such a game changer? I mean, once again, your thing about, you know, the influence of parenting, war, advertising, loneliness, blah, 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 that TV has had on us. Is there anything apart from AI that you might put on that list?
I would, but it goes back a long way. I think credit cards, for instance, were a disruptive game changer, because up until then, credit, in other words, using money you didn't have, was really difficult to come by. You had to have a loan, you had to have it from a bank, you had to have surety. There was none of this ability to buy on the off chance we might be able to pay it back in 30 days or longer.
And it had lots of negative overtones to it as well.
Absolutely. And it's really changed the whole structure and the whole feeling. We now feel that some people feel they're entitled to have things before they can save for it. Nothing meant by that, just that's a change in society's feelings. Before, it wasn't uncommon for us to have to save, to go on lay-by, to use other things. So for me, credit cards, which in Australia came about in 1974 or so. They were the Amexes, the Diners Club beforehand, but Popular Bank ones in Australia was 1974 onwards. That changed things dramatically as well. We can go back further and talk about the printing press, Gutenberg's printing press, and that, of course, changed forever, thankfully, education, democratization to information, all sorts of things. So there are lots and lots of them. We don't just have to look at AI in other areas to see how worlds change.
And all this because it's 100 years since the world's first 30 lines of TV broadcast in 1926. Cheers, Maurice. That was fun. I'll talk to you next week. Have a good one, mate. Bye-bye for now. That's Maurice Misolowski live from Melbourne. So, our weather forecast. Cloudy, sunny periods, some haze, light to moderate northeasterly winds. Sunny periods tomorrow, cooling down a little bit in the following few days. It's 23 Celsius now and 65% humidity. 12:30, time for the news.
Eric Tsung has resigned as